Now we move on to economics. Last week, the British bank HSBC announced it will close Decision One Mortgage. That's its major subprime mortgage division in the U.S. Now, that's Europe's largest bank, and it fears hundreds of millions of dollars in losses this year alone. For more, we've got author and economist Julianne Malveaux. She's president also of Bennett College. Hi, Julianne.
Hey, Farai. How are you?
I am doing great. So how many people are going to lose their jobs, you think, because of this?
It may be as many as 750 or 800. Decision One Mortgage has branches here in North Carolina, where we're expected to lose at least 300 jobs, in South Carolina, and I think in Arizona, because they do have a division out west. It's a mixed move. We're going to lose jobs. We're also, some people will lose opportunities, but it's a fiscally responsible move, and it's a move that really speaks to what's happening in mortgage markets here in the United States now.
It is a lot smaller than the 10,000 who are being let go from Countrywide, but still continuing a process that you and I have talked about. Now, when we talk about HSBC, which has been dominant in Europe, but now you see if you go to the airports, you'll see signs for them in the U.S., are we really talking about them getting burned by the real estate market in the U.S. or in the U.K. or both?
I think mostly they have had negative both economic outcomes but also image outcomes in the U.S. HSBC has aggressively come into the U.S. market. It's a British bank, as you mentioned, but they've come in here as they've seen several of our large banks attempting to get toeholds into commercial banking. They don't need the negative publicity around the subprime mortgage lending. They don't want to be seen as a big one for that. They're sensitive about that kind of image, especially because of what they're trying to do. So that's one reason for getting rid of Decision One. But the other reason is, as we know, and as you said, we've talked about quite a bit, subprime lending is less profitable than people expected it to be, because when you lend money to people with spotty credit, they may or may not pay back. These banks don't want to be in the real estate business. They don't want you to not pay your mortgage. They don't want your house. They really want you to pay your mortgage, and they want to make that big profit from you. But if they're stuck with houses from people who've defaulted, they've got to have a whole other set of human resources to manage that.
So if they're backing out, who ends up picking up that business? Does anybody want it at this point?
That's a business right now that people are looking at with caution. In addition, we have up in the air questions about what the federal government will do around subprime lending, whether or not we expect the FHA to step in and do some rescue work. Mr. Bush has talked a bit about some possibilities for providing federal guarantees, but the guarantees would only go to the people who have good credit, Farai. So it's kind of a contradiction. The people who really need the help are the ones who have poor credit, but the president proposes helping those with good credit. So what you can expect to see, unless some other kind of proposals are forwarded, is that especially among the low-income people of color, some home ownership loss in the long run, really in the medium run.
Now, the housing market is something we have looked at, the subprime lending, but we've also been looking at the interest rate. The Fed last week cut the interest rate by a half of 1%. Could this, in a strange way, lead to inflation, Julianne?
Well, what the Fed did was cut the price of money. They made money a bit cheaper than it used to be, which makes it possible for more people to get in and, quote, buy money. Money becomes more affordable. So if the cut in interest rates puts pressure on the money market, yes, you could expect to see some inflation. I think it's a little too early to see. There are a number of other things that raise questions. The market is really oscillating right now, Farai, so you really can't talk about inflation as the biggest issue. I think one of the other big issues is just what's happening with the dollar, which is very weak. It's much weaker than it's ever been. For the first time in 30 years, I believe, the dollar and the Canadian dollar are trading equivalently. We've lost so much value against the euro that it's amusing. Well, it's not amusing, but it's amazing. You look at it and say, how did that happen? So inflation, a weak dollar, a weak housing market, all those things together talk about recessionary possibilities.
You're always good at breaking it down for what it means for people's day-to-day. Now, if you travel outside the country, currency is going to be an issue for you. But in terms of the Fed interest rate, is that really going to have an effect on most people's day-to-day?
For most people, no. It's going to have an effect on someone who is going to buy a home, who's looking for credit, things like that. But for the average person, I don't expect, if you're a renter, well, that's a little complex. But if you're, most people will not see a big difference. If you're a renter and your rental market is affected by pressure, people coming out of housing markets, going into rental, you expect to see something. But really, I think that the average person who goes to work every day, comes home, pays their rent, buys their groceries, we're not going to see anything in the next month or so. However, I expect that people should be vigilant. And people should be looking at any number of things. We've seen people talk about spending less money. And as people talk about spending less money and we go into a holiday season, we're in September. About 40% of all consumer spending for rye happens in the last quarter of the year, people getting ready for Christmas, Thanksgiving, and things like that. And many retailers expect that that's a time of the year when they're going to make up for anything that had happened earlier in the year. Some industries like jewelry and others really get a big hit during toys, during the that last quarter of the year. And so as we see these other economic trends, while nothing happens day to day, does it affect your savings? And does that mean you'll do something different around Christmas this year? And the average American family spends about $800 on Christmas. That's a median, half above, half below. So so we don't have to worry about October, but we do have to think ahead.
Well, you bring up a perfect transition to the toy industry. Last week, the executive vice president of toy maker Mattel apologized to the country of China for the massive recall of Chinese-made products. Now, over 21 million toys were recalled on the grounds that there was too much lead in the paint on the toys. But now it looks like the majority of those toys were recalled by Mattel because of a design flaw that actually originated in the U.S. So what was that flaw, and how did that whole debate go back and forth between the U.S. in China?
Well, frankly, Farai, this is all about face saving at some level between Mattel and China. As we all know, the Chinese manufacturing industry is, for many people like Mattel, more preferable than the manufacturing industry in the United States. The employees are cheaper, they work more quickly, and that means the products are cheaper for consumers here in the United States. It does not do for a Mattel that basically is dependent on Chinese manufacturing to come out and diss Chinese manufacturers, which is essentially what the first statement did in recalling and apologizing to the United States. Chinese people and vis-a-vis industry and technology tend to be very prideful and have a whole culture around saving face. And so the apology was really about saving face and making the Chinese feel that it wasn't all their fault. Because after all, if they decide they don't want to manufacture for Mattel, maybe for someone else, that's going to affect Mattel. It's been very interesting because one of the things we learned is that the Consumer Product Safety Commission has not done its work on regulating, overseeing some of these toys and other products. But it's not just toys. Some of these things made in China have caused deaths, and it's really not clear. There are 3 or 4 infants killed in these cribs where the top rail comes down and the children were like strangled as the rail came down. And it's not clear whether these are manufacturing flaws or design flaws. I think that fault is shared. And the apologies, frankly, belie the loss of life that some families have had to deal with as their children have been killed.
But when it comes down to these issues of, as you bring up, pridefulness, saving face, isn't it just imperative that the U.S.-based companies, because they are trying to create these goods for U.S.-based consumers, take the lead in trying to figure out exactly what's going on and how to meet these safety standards?
You're absolutely right. It's insufficient for them to simply send a design template and expect that these things will be produced properly. I think that Mattel and some of the others really need to have inspectors, U.S.-based inspectors, at our Chinese manufacturer, at their Chinese manufacturing plant, so that with an inspection standard, fewer faulty toys get out. But the context, and I don't mean to stereotype or anything when talking about saving face, but when you understand the economic intertwinedness, the interconnectedness between the Chinese economy and the U.S. economy, and the number of times in the past 2 months or three, Farai, that China has had to take a hit about faulty products, even faulty agriculture. They have to be feeling pretty defensive right now, and it has to be very tense for those who are expecting this cheap labor from China to produce, to add to our GDP.
If you're a parent and you are thinking about buying those holiday toys, what sorts of assurances should you look for, or what sorts of warnings?
If I were a parent, I wouldn't buy toys, but that's another story. I don't believe in
tough love.
It's hard out there for a pimp. I just, the whole toy thing becomes, there's going to be a toy that's going to come out in November and everyone's going to have it, and parents are going to start standing in line for it. We don't know if it's safe or not. It's probably going to, maybe an electronic, as we've had the PlayStations and other things. But parents need to be careful. They need to go online if they can and look at what the Consumer Product Safety Commission is saying. People like Consumer Reports also evaluate some of these toys, and so they need to look at that. They need to raise questions with, if they go to Toys R Us or wherever, what kind of returns are you getting? Even the internet is a great source with some of these toys for consumer comments. What are you getting? If there are movable parts, one of the things that happened with the cribs is there seem to be movable parts. Check to see if these parts are something that your child can dissemble, you know, unwittingly and be hurt with. And, you know, if you need to modify the toy or the item so that it is really child safe. I mean, parents have to take responsibility here. Certainly, we want manufacturers to produce safe toys. But I think also, as you say, first of all, U.S. industry has to be ahead of the curve, not behind it.
Well, it's Julianne, thank you so much for joining us. And we've been speaking with
up there.
Julianne Malvo, author and economist, president of Bennett College, joined us from WFDD in Greensboro, North Carolina.